From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with J.W. Richards, author of Eat, Fast, Feast, Heal Your Body While Feeding Your Soul, A Christian Guide to Fasting. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and J.W. Richards in their conversation.
In terms of the physics, it's true that fat per gram has 9 calories, whereas protein and carbohydrates have 4 calories. And so you say if the only thing that matters is the amount of food energy that goes in, yeah, that would be true. The problem is that our bodies are not simple thermodynamic systems. We're complex biological systems, so that every input creates a particular response. Our bodies are like thermostats. So it's not that calories are unimportant. It's just that our body responds differently depending upon what we're putting into our bodies. And so if you eat, for instance, a very high-fat, very low-carbohydrate diet, your body's actually going to use more calories on average than if you're eating a high-carbohydrate, low-fat diet. You're going to be warmer. Your body's going to be more thermic energy that your body is producing. And so that's the kind of key thing that's missing in a lot of these eat less, move more types of dietary advice, is that our bodies respond differently to different kinds of food inputs. And so we're not just consuming abstract calories or generic calories. We eat foods that have particular effects on our metabolism. And depending upon what they are and how we mix them, they're going to have different effects. And so that's the kind of key thing that's missing. It's really easy to think of our bodies as just, okay, the only thing that has anything that matters is how many calories I eat. That's simple to remember, but to have to think about these macronutrients and the way they affect our insulin levels and blood sugar, it's a little more complicated. And so unfortunately, we've been fed this kind of cartoonish understanding of human physiology and metabolism that doesn't serve us well.
By the way, there's nothing complicated about the book. Once you get the major premise, it's stuck in your mind and you can apply. But to that end, I want you to deal with something that I'm sure is in the back of the minds of a lot of people listening to us right now. And that is that they have been burned by diets over and over again. They go on a diet, they lose the weight, but then they end up gaining the weight and then some more. And then they find another diet and they do the same thing. So they've been burned so many times. They now come across your book and they say, you know what? What if I go on this and the same thing happens once again? What's your response?
That is an honest response that I expect. And I get this question from a lot of people. And here's the key thing. Almost any diet that you go on will work in the short run, and then it will fail in the long run. And I don't need to tell your listeners this. Anybody that's tried it knows this is true. It's exactly what happens. But the reason is because most diets involve persistent calorie reduction, in which you decide, okay, I'm going to eat a little less, and I'm going to do that every day until I get to my target weight. Well, that works in the short run for most people. You can go on a low-fat, you can go on a low-carb diet. There's all sorts. You go on a grapefruit diet. Almost anything you do that changes the way you eat from the standard American diet is almost always an improvement in the long term. But here's the problem, is that doing that kind of persistent calorie reduction changes your metabolism. And so if you keep eating less than your body needs, what your body does is it just slows down its metabolism to adjust to that kind of lower level of food intake. And you will, in fact, if you do that for a long period of time, you actually lose some of the lean body mass that you have. In other words, you lose some muscle, so your body's not using as many calories. Well, so what happens is that if you start eating again the way you were, you've got a slower metabolism now. And so your body's going to be in the mode where it wants to store fat at that point. That's the difference between dieting and fasting. Fasting doesn't do that. Persistent calorie reduction will lower your metabolism and slow your resting energy expenditures. That's a technical term. Fasting doesn't do that. It turns out if you do a water-only fast for 24 hours, your metabolism actually goes up. So the amount of energy that your body is using goes up. It releases certain hormones like norepinephrine that increase our metabolism. It releases human growth hormone, which preserves the lean muscle mass. So it does exactly the opposite of what you'd expect. In fact, you actually have to fast for about 5 days to get your metabolism in the same level that it was before you fasted. So in other words, you could fast for 5 days straight and you still wouldn't have appreciably slowed down your metabolism. And so really just the simple answer is that the physiological effects of intermittent fasting, where you don't fast all the time, but you fast sometimes and you eat sometimes, is completely different than the metabolic effects of persistent calorie deprivation, which is what most diets involve.
So a lot of people perusing your book very quickly and not paying attention to the details say, oh, this is a keto diet. So basically, high fat, moderate protein, low carbs, get most of my carbs from vegetables. I've heard of that before. But this is not a keto diet per se. It's a keto plus. And that plus is not just an add-on, it's inextricably woven together in the fabric of what you do, and that again is fasting.
That's exactly right. I mean, I do think, and I draw on the keto diet literature, and it's really because there are only two ways to get your body into ketosis. And ketosis, I argue, is if you can't get your body doing that, you're never going to be successful at fasting. And there are really only two ways to do that. You can either not eat for 3 days. That's the hard way to do it. Just stop eating. Your body will eventually quickly use up all the sugar that's stored in your muscles and in your liver, and then it'll start producing ketones. That's the tough way to do it. The other way is just to eat ketogenically for 3 days. That's the easy way to do it, where you eat lots of fat. In fact, you boost the amount of fat. You drop the carbohydrates way down. So really your only carbohydrate intake when you're doing this would just be sort of green leafy vegetables and stuff like that. And within about 3 days, your body is going to be producing ketones. So that ketosis state is absolutely important. But I don't tell people that they're going to have to eat a ketogenic diet permanently. What I think that sort of ideal long-term goal is that you would be metabolically flexible. And that just means that your body can either be in that normal kind of sugar burning state where it's taking sugar and turning it into glucose, or in the ketosis state where it's taking fats and turning them into ketones. And if you do this for a few months, your body gets used to doing that. But when you first do it, it's kind of like if you think of your body as a hybrid, like a Toyota Prius, that's just constantly having the battery recharged and it never actually uses its gasoline tank at all. Well, when it first uses its gas, if that's been sitting in the tank for months, it's going to be a little sluggish. And that's unfortunately where most of us are. But 2 or 3 months out when you've been doing this, your body will be used to adjusting between these two different states, and you'll be able to find the level of carbohydrate tolerances that are right for you.
Talk about how carbs raise your blood sugar and provoke an insulin response. So you have this hormone that becomes a gatekeeper, but there's a big downside to that.
There is. And this is the sort of complicated thing that obesity and diabetes researchers, you know, had to figure out. I mean, we talk about type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes, but they're really two different things. And what ultimately leads to type 2 diabetes is so-called insulin resistance. And that's what happens when you're constantly raising your blood sugar level to dangerous levels over and over and over again over a long period of years. In other words, if you're perfectly healthy and you just drink 3 regular Cokes, right, that's going to boost your blood sugar. That's going to lead to any kind of permanent physical damage. But raising our blood sugar constantly to dangerous levels, it's like smoking. Smoking one cigarette's not going to kill you, but smoking 3 packs a day for 25 years is a really bad idea. And so what happens is we consume something that immediately gets converted to sugar. So essentially, almost any carbohydrate is going to do this, but certainly simple carbohydrates. That immediately sugar enters into our bloodstream and it gets above a certain level, and our body is very good at getting that sugar out of the bloodstream because it's very bad for your veins and your arteries and your organs to have high blood sugar. And the way it does this is with this signaling molecule called insulin that's produced by your pancreas. And so your pancreas sends a signal out into your blood, insulin, and insulin is essentially a signal that tells all the cells in your body, open up and take some of this sugar, right? So it's literally what it does. And then if it's working properly, those cells open up and they absorb the sugar from your bloodstream. And then the insulin goes down and your blood sugar levels drop back down into normal levels. Now, our body, if you're healthy, is really good at doing this, and it does it really quickly. But if you do this constantly, so you're constantly having high blood sugar, what happens is that your cells can only take so much of this. They themselves can only take so much sugar. And so they start resisting, sort of putting up the barriers to absorbing more sugar, but you still got too much sugar in your blood. So what's going to happen? Your pancreas is going to produce even more insulin to get the cells to open up to absorb that sugar and take it out of your bloodstream. And so you keep this cycle going. Do this for years and years and years, and you end up with what's called insulin resistance, where effectively the cells in your body just are resistant to the effect of insulin. And then you get persistent high blood sugar, and you go to the doctor and you've got really bad high blood sugar, and the way your doctor fixes that in many cases is by giving you more insulin. So you now are taking artificial insulin. That helps the problem in the short term, but again, it just treats the symptoms and not the problem. And so your body keeps doing this. And then, of course, in the meantime, what's been happening is all this extra sugar has been being stored as fat, subcutaneous fat under our skin, which is the kind we don't like to look at. It's not really all that unhealthy. But then so-called visceral fat. And the visceral, that's your viscera, that's your intestines and your liver and your stomach. In other words, storing fat around our hearts and our livers and our intestines. And that's where it gets really, really dangerous. And it can even build up around your pancreas and then mess up the pancreas's ability to produce insulin. So all of this, it's a problem that it accrues over years and years of eating a high carbohydrate, high sugar diet. And so the effects are only felt after 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years. But for most of us, if we're over 30 years old, we've been doing that.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with J.W. Richards. Eat, Fast, Feast by J.W. Richards reveals that God is interested in more than just our physical health. He's interested in healing the whole of us, body, soul, and spirit. Eat, Fast, Feast outlines a plan for the ancient Christian practice of intermittent fasting that can help you experience deeper life in Christ. To receive your copy of Eat, Fast, Feast, Heal Your Body While Feeding Your Soul, A Christian Guide to Fasting, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift in support of the life-giving outreaches of the Christian Research Institute. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.
Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles that equip you to exercise truth and experience life. Here's what's in the current special double issue of the Christian Research Journal. Dante's Inferno can help explain hell to modern seekers. Counter to our intuitions, Dante depicts sinners as eager to enter the inferno, for hell promises to give them exactly what they want, their sin and themselves forever. Other topics include, did the universe really have a beginning? Christian apologetics in a nutshell, Christianity and the origins of hospitals and modern medicine, the indomitable human spirit of Philip K. Dick, why arguments over fetal pain capability ultimately miss the mark in the abortion debate, and much, much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org.
Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless, natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book, or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.
Like millions concerned about their health, Hank Hanegraaff had never really known which diet plan to trust. But he's found the secret to healing the whole of you, body, soul, and spirit. Eat, Fast, Feast, Heal Your Body While Feeding Your Soul by J.W. Richards reveals that God is interested in more than just our physical health. He's interested in healing the whole of us. Eat, Fast, Feast outlines a plan found in the ancient Christian practice of intermittent fasting that can help you experience deeper life in Christ. To receive Eat, Fast, Feast, Heal Your Body While Feeding Your Soul, A Christian Guide to Fasting, simply visit equip.org. That's equip.org. And make a gift in support of the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute. Or call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. 7000 CRI. Can one person make a difference? The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who we remember today, profoundly changed the course of American history with his nonviolent resistance to racial segregation and discrimination. As Dr. King made clear, the consistent application of biblical principles inevitably leads to emancipation. Yes, one person can make a difference.
Let's rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and J.W. Richards in their conversation.
Talk about the importance, Jay, of drinking lots of water, being hydrated.
Yeah, it's funny because this is the thing. I feel like I'm a broken record in the book, but I'm constantly reminding people when they're going through this regime to drink lots and lots of liquid and to keep up their electrolytes, so things like magnesium and sodium, and so actually increasing the amount of salt that they consume. And the reason is because, to sort of put it simplistically, I mean, the word carbohydrate, it's right in the word, so it has the word carbon in it, right, carbo, and then hydrate, as in water, hydrogen, right, H2O. Carbohydrates, they bring with them sugar molecules, and so your body, when you're eating a high-carbohydrate diet, actually stores extra water, and so you actually, depending upon your size, might have 5 to 7 extra pounds of water that you're carrying around. When you start fasting, or let's say you start the transition plan and you do a ketogenic diet for a week, the first thing that's going to happen is that your body is going to flush all of that extra water. And when it does this, it also tends to flush some of the electrolytes that are in your system. And a lot of people that did the Atkins diet in the 1980s and 1990s had this thing. They would have an Atkins flu or a so-called keto flu where you felt dizzy and you just didn't feel quite right. You might even feel kind of nauseated. Turns out the reason is because your electrolytes are in balance because you're losing a bunch of water. Well, and so you need to counteract that when you're first doing this. And so it's sort of counterintuitive, but people that are first on a ketogenic diet for a week need to be drinking broth and things like that that have a lot of extra salt just to keep your electrolytes up. I also advise people when they first start doing this to kind of stay away from the scale. And the reason is because the first thing that happens when you start eating this way is you lose that water, and so all of a sudden you're 5 or 7 pounds lighter, and it might tempt you to think, okay, I'm going to lose 7 pounds a week as long as I stick to this. Well, you will slowly be losing body fat as well, but that first weight that you lose is actually all that extra water that you were holding on to because of the carbohydrates. And so that's something that if people have heard, well, I tried the Atkins diet back in the 90s and it made me feel sick. It was almost certainly because people didn't really understand this relationship about water and electrolytes. So if you're doing this, you just boost up the amount of water and you increase the amount of salt in your diet. And for most people that do that, they don't feel any of these weird symptoms.
That just seems like heresy when you mention salt. I have lots of salt, but I love it now. I mean, I have my spinach, but lots of salt on that. It just seems like completely the opposite of what I'm supposed to do. Tastes great, and it's good for me.
No, that's right. I mean, a lot of these things, if you actually look into the details, now we know, look, if you have really, really high blood pressure, and so increasing salt in your diet can actually increase your blood pressure. But if you don't have that problem, there is absolutely no evidence that there are health problems with having a high salt diet or having salt in your diet. In fact, if anything, there's probably more bad things that can happen than good by doing that. And so this inordinate fear that we have of salt, it doesn't make any sense under normal circumstances, and it makes even less sense if you're eating ketogenically or you're fasting. You really need to keep up the salt intake in order to make sure that your electrolytes stay balanced.
You make the claim in the book that we have two brains. Cash that out for people, because it's absolutely true, but a lot of people don't think of it that way.
No, they don't. I mean, this is when I first heard this idea that we had two brains myself. I was actually very skeptical and had to look into it and very quickly discovered that, in fact, it's true. We actually have a bunch of neurons in our gut that is attached to our large intestine. If you think of neurons as brain cells, well, they are, but they're not just in the brain. It happens. We have a bunch of them down in our gut. Moreover, we actually have this information superhighway, this powerful nerve that connects our brains directly to our gut that it turns out is very important. It's important for our emotions. It's important for our brain health. And I suspect that one of the reasons that there's this kind of amazing mental lucidity that you experience when you're fasting is this kind of information superhighway. We know that fasting changes the so-called microbiome, that is the organisms that live in our gut that we carry around with us. They actually do different things. They produce different chemical signals and transmit information to our brains. And so I think one of the things that's happening when we're fasting. One, we're producing a lot of ketones, and our brains really like to use ketones as a source of fuel. And the second thing is that we're changing up the types of critters that exist symbiotically in our gut, and those are also transmitting things to our brain. So this is all kind of cutting edge stuff. This isn't anything that we really knew 20 years ago, but it's now not all that controversial that, yes, we've got this kind of brain-gut connection, we've got neurons in our gut, and that there's this mysterious connection between what's happening in our brains and what's actually happening in our gut with these critters that we carry along.
One of the most intriguing chapters in the book for me was a chapter that's titled Fasting to Fight Disease and Live Longer. And there you talk about a number of different things, including how this kind of eating pattern, how fasting inextricably woven together with the eating pattern can cure all kinds of diseases, actually, or stave them off.
That's right. And this is the part of the book I almost wanted a whole separate book on this, but I couldn't do that. But this is the kind of the cutting edge research. And as you know, Hank, one of the things that people are using fasting for is to basically make chemotherapy easier. So a lot of people, it's still somewhat controversial, but people that are undergoing chemotherapy have discovered that chemo is both more effective and actually much less difficult if prior to chemotherapy you undergo fasting. We've known for a long time that fasting has an effect on things like epilepsy. In fact, fasting and ketogenic diets were the really kind of only way of treating childhood epilepsy for a long time. But the cancer connection is the one that is the most fascinating to me, because it's been known for a long time that many cancer cells actually have a different metabolism than other cells. And so I'm simplifying things, but essentially most of the cells in your body can use either sugar for fuel or fat for fuel in the form of ketones. But it was discovered by a German scientist in the 1920s named Otto Warburg. He discovered that most cancer cells, because of essentially a break in them, are not good at using fat. They need to use sugar for fuel, which suggests that if you deprive your body of sugar, in other words, if you just use fat for fuel, you'll feed all of your normal and healthy cells and actually, in a sense, could be starving the cancer cells. And that, to me, is one of the most exciting things. It's still the kind of cutting edge of cancer research, but there are a number of very respected cancer researchers, including Walter Longo in California, that are actively researching this. I call it a tantalizing hypothesis in the book, but I really do think that we're going to discover some important stuff about the connection between fasting and cancer in the future.
I have no doubt about this because, you know, before I went into the transplant, I had to do a physical test and a mental test. They repeat it after 100 days, I think, after you do the transplant, and they see if you've lost any mental acumen or any physical abilities, and I scored just as high afterwards as I did before. And I was involved intentionally during this whole period with the intermittent fasting. I did the 3-day water-only fast to make the chemotherapy less damaging to my good cells and more efficacious in destroying the cancer cells. So, you know, again, it's anecdotal with me, but certainly I think it's been very helpful. But something else that you mention here is that I have a little neuropathy in my feet. Mm-hmm. There's the possibility of regenerating some of the nerve cells and so forth using these same methods.
That's right. And this is because of a process that's now well understood. But again, this is your recent information, is a process called autophagy. And autophagy just means literally from the Greek, it's sort of self-eating. But essentially, you could think of our cells as having these two different modes. They can have the kind of go-go mode where you're using energy and you're having to use your muscles to do stuff and you're eating, and so your body's actively having to metabolize and break down foods and store it and things like that. And that's the mode that when you're eating, your cells are going to be in, this kind of go-go mode. But there's also a recycle and repair mode in which your body, if it's under certain conditions, your cells will actually start repairing either some of just the metabolites and the sources of energy they may reuse, those simple proteins, but may actually repair and recycle some of the broken organelles. So you think of your cell as this kind of complex integrated factory, has hundreds of different kinds of systems inside it. Some of those things break down and they need to be repaired. Well, it turns out our cells have a mode in which they repair themselves. It's called autophagy. Now, but here's the interesting thing. Here's how it's connected to fasting. If you're eating constantly, you keep your cells in go mode rather than recycle and repair mode. So the main way to have your cells signal that it's time to repair is fasting. About 36 hours into a fast, your cells go into this stage of autophagy where they start recycling. So they recycle nutrients that they have, they break down and recycle parts. In fact, at the extreme, they even go into programmed cell death, where the cell basically kills itself, it's recycled in the larger system, and then a new cell is replaced. This is a really important kind of recent scientific discoveries, and the connection with fasting just really much more recently has been made. And I suspect, and again, this level of kind of testable hypothesis, that it's this effect of fasting on autophagy, that is effect of fasting on cell recycling, that is the reason people are finding all these amazing health benefits to fasting. Because it literally trains, you're signaling to your body, okay, slow down, settle down, and repair and recycle. Of course, that's what you want to do that with your car. You want to park your car. You don't want to run your car at 5,000 RPMs all the time. And you don't want to do that with your body as well.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Be sure to tune in again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with the author of Eat, Fast, Feast, J.W. Richards. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand the life-changing outreaches of the Christian Research Institute, Hank would like to send you a copy of Eat, Fast, Feast, Heal Your Body While Feeding Your Soul, A Christian Guide to Fasting. Simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles that equip you to exercise truth and experience life. Here's what's in the current special double issue of the Christian Research Journal. Because questions remain about the earliest moments of the universe, scientists offer speculative alternatives to our universe having an actual beginning. Nevertheless, the science that is known to be true provides abundant evidence that the universe came into being a finite time ago, just as the Bible teaches. Other topics include how Dante's Inferno can help explain hell to modern seekers, Christian apologetics in a nutshell, John Chrysostom, the Golden Mouth Preacher, Christian imagination and the problem of horrendous evil, and much, much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org.